I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is going to be episode number 248.
That is Patrick. He is an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. Check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a podcaster and a musician and a teacher, and you can check out my website, johnanilio.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at John Anilio, and you can check out our website, Functional Nerds. And I will give a little quick thing to say that Patrick and I are just starting a Patreon. So if you like the show and listen to it every week and would like to give us a little bit to help support the podcast, that would be awesome. And that is at patreon.com/functionalnerds.
And John, it's interesting. I've heard people pronounce it lots of different ways. We pronounce it Patreon. Other people said Patreon. And, mm-hmm. and just recently I heard Patreon.
Patreon. That's a good one too. Yeah. I say Patreon. I think the guy that started Patreon is the guy from, what's the name of the, it's the duo that did all those like cover songs and stuff in those videos. I can't think of their name right now. Jack is the guy's name. And I think I've heard him say Patreon. So he's the founder. So I'm going to go by the guy who founded it. He pronounces it. Anyway, our guest today is Rajan Khanna. He's a returning guest to the podcast. He's the author of Falling Sky and a graduate of the 2008 Clarion West Writers Workshop and a member of the New York-based writing group Altered Fluid, who we had a member on last week with Matt Kressel. His fiction has appeared in Beneath Ceaseless Skies, Shimmer Magazine, and other anthologies. He writes for Tor.com and LickReactor.com and does podcast narrations for Lightspeed Magazine, Escape Pod, Podcastle, and lots of other stuff. He also writes about wine, beer, and spirits at FermentedAdventures.com.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut in. That website is no longer functional.
Oh, no. So. Oh, boo. Okay, so sorry. This is
did it go bad?
It's skunked, so
yeah. Oh, well, Roger, thanks for coming on the show today. And it's funny because I had a question about that. Maybe you can answer it anyway because it isn't particular to the website. But so when they say spirits, I know what it means. Like I know what they're describing. But do you know where that term comes from? Why they call it spirits?
Actually, I don't. I mean, I guess when I think about it, I always think about how I don't know, like heavy alcohol, there's always kind of some vapor. So maybe that's what I associate with it, but I don't really know. I wonder if, I mean, it could be anything. I'd have to look it up. You know, it makes you spirited or it possesses you with spirit. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be any one of a number of those things. So that's some of the stuff that you do. So are you still doing other stuff? Because I know we've talked about your kind of interest in craft beer and that kind of stuff. Are you doing anything sort of writing wise with that these days?
I haven't really. I mean, you know, the difficulty with having the website, it was always like a hobby project. And, you know, I tried to get other people to participate as well. And it was just a time issue. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, oh, I should be writing my fiction or, you know, doing something else. So I've been thinking about writing on my website more about it. Just because, I mean, this is going to come out sounding bad, but I do drink a lot of beer, like to try a lot of different beers. And so I feel like, you know, even if it's just like right now it's pumpkin beer season and
yes, it
I'm
is.
Not a huge fan of pumpkin beer, but every year I throw myself headlong into like trying what's new or, you know, retrying the stuff that I've had before. And each year I think my like ranking changes. So I was thinking about writing about something like that, but nothing more formal than that at this point.
I'm part of several different writers groups, not all critique groups, but just like writer networking groups in Colorado. One of them is called the Tesla Group. And we met at a, what are they calling them now? Microbrewery kind of place, but where they also serve food and you know
a gastro pub. They would call that a lot.
No, it's not really a gastro pub.
Not a gastro pub. Okay.
It's Rockyard Brewery or something like that, mm-hmm. and they were really pushing the pumpkin spice ale thing, mm-hmm. whatever. and everybody's going, oh, pumpkin spice. It's like, and it reminded me of this thing I saw on Facebook that it was a restaurant or a bar or something, and they had one of the signs where they put the little letters up on it, right? And then you could, anyway, it said, what did it say? Pumpkin spice tacos are here. And then underneath it, it said, just kidding, drink tequila.
That's good. Yeah, we you know, one of the things that we may do with the Patreon is the hopes that we start getting enough, reach our levels, that we're going to start some additional shows. And one of the shows that we may start is Rob Bedford, who's a friend of ours, who writes for Tor.com a little bit, and
right,
writes for SF Signal and SFF World. He and I are local to each other in New Jersey, and we are both big fans of craft beer. So we may start a podcast that is a combination of craft beer appreciation and science fiction and fantasy stuff, because we've noticed that a lot of authors do like this stuff and are kind of interested in it. So we're going to try to combine those. So yeah, if you want to hear that show, go start donating to the Patreon.
I think that is a great idea. Actually, I had a similar idea, and it was something that I was, you know, thinking, you know, I'll just get some writer friends or people in the community, and we'll get together and actually drink beer and talk about it. Again, you know, time issue thing.
Exactly.
But if you guys do it and you ever need a guest,
you were the first person I was thinking of. So. All right. Well, you know what? That actually is going to, I think, lead us to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And I will go first, because my pick is going to be exactly what Patrick was just sort of joking around about. So a couple of weeks ago, I went to there was this food truck and craft beer and metal music festival in New Jersey, in Clark, New Jersey. It's like my three favorite things. Like,
so you saw the flyer and you said, just take all my money now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Rob Bedford went on the Sunday. I went on the Saturday. So the bands I saw Kix and King's X, and I saw Stephen Piercy, the lead singer from Rat. Not Rat.
Wow.
The lead singer from Rat only. I saw Skid Row without Sebastian Bach, with a different singer. It was great, because I think now they realize that this is kind of an underserved market. Like, you would see these sort of, you know, sort of state fair kind of stuff in the Midwest where they would have these bands. But I think New Jersey was like, hey, I know we're like on the East Coast, but I bet you there's some dorks like, you know, John and Elio who would come out and spend $40 for a day to see these washed up bands and drink some good beer, which I totally did. So I went, and it was a really good time. I thought it was a great event. The music was great and I enjoyed everything. And I'm looking for my app here. The beer that I had while I was there, because you had to buy these tokens,
yeah,
to get your beer, because I don't think they want you to tip the bartenders. So I think they want you to buy the token, so you just give it, which made the bartenders a little grumpy, I've noticed. Yeah. They were not like the the most outgoing, nicest batch. But the beer that I had that I enjoyed, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, and Rajan, if you know how to pronounce it, it is Weyerbacher. Like, do you pronounce that with a W or a V? Is it Weyerbacher? It's and it's an imperial pumpkin ale that they make. It's Weyerbacher. I don't know if it's Weyerbacher or Weyerbacher. It's a readily available brand. I've seen it in the stores quite a bit. But they have an imperial pumpkin ale. It was delicious, and it really was very good. I know we like to make fun of pumpkin things, but it was very good. And 8% alcohol, pretty high. That is pretty high. And that was one of the reasons I got it, because those tokens were $9 a pop. So each beer was $9. And I'm like, well, I don't really want to have more than two. So let me get one that's pretty strong. So I got that. So that is my pick this week. That is the Weyerbacher Imperial Pumpkin
Ale. And John, a lot of times here, the IPAs in Colorado are 9 or 10%.
Oh yeah, they get up there, those IPAs. You know, I've had ones that are like 10. 8 to me is about, I think once you start getting way above that, it starts affecting how it tastes a lot of times.
Well, I think I told you I took my brother to the Aurora Tap House, which is not too far from my house, and they had that. And he was pissed because I ordered him a beer and they brought him this small glass of beer, in his opinion. But that small glass of beer had 10% alcohol.
Oh yeah.
Which is why they gave you this small glass of beer, right? So he was immediately complaining, because what he likes to do is just, you know, keep drinking.
Yeah.
After that first one, he actually started nursing them, which I've never seen him do, because it immediately hit him and he was like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's not like drinking Coors Light where you have to drink like 12 of them to start feeling anything. It's
exactly.
Like, two, you're going to go for it. Have you heard of that one before, Raj, in the Weyerbacher or Weyerbacher?
Yeah, that's actually, and I say Weyerbacher, so okay. I don't know what the official pronunciation is, but that is one of my favorites in terms of the pumpkin beers, to be honest. So, yeah, like every season that the beers come out, I know if I go to that one, it's a solid beer.
Yeah.
But I also tend to like the Imperials just because I feel like if you're just going to put a little bit of pumpkin flavor, then it's like, it's almost like, you know, a couple drops of pumpkin in my beer. I don't really need that. But if you're going to do it, I want it like it to be really bold. So that's one of the reasons I like those stronger ones.
Yeah. I really liked it a lot. And I almost, you know, the day we're recording this is I think it's called the Garden State Brew Festival, which is not too far from where I live, which was, it looked pretty good. Like, you know, for like 50 or 60 bucks, I think you get to sample everything. And then I think if you went to like 100 bucks, they had all these chefs that were pairing food with all the beers. And so you just, and it's on like some golf course somewhere out here. And it's just basically like eat and drink all day. I was almost like going to blow off the podcast and go to that today. That sounded pretty good.
And John, I'll throw it out there that the token system that you encountered, that's actually used a lot of places, and it's to keep underage people from drinking or being able to drink. So basically, because you have to show them your ID when you buy the tokens. So that's so the festival controls it. And the only way you can get a beer then or alcohol is to give over a token. So it like protects everybody.
It made sense to me too. Like it was annoying at first when we went to go order and put a cash. They're like, you have to get tokens. And that was annoying, but it made sense because they were serving so much and there were so many people there that every bartender had to deal with like going to make change and work on a register, that would slow everything down. Also, I imagine the festival, like that's pretty easy for someone to, you know, maybe throw a couple bucks in their pocket and skim off the top as doing it. So right there, you sort of centralize the, it was only like two registers that they had to worry. It made sense after that. I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I get it, you know. But yeah, so it was cool. I had a good time. So that's my pick. Okay, Rajan, what is your pick this week then?
Every time I get asked stuff like this, I have been busy like reading stuff for review or, you know, not having time to watch anything or play any interesting games lately, which is sad. But I'm really late to this party. But the most recent thing I read that I got excited by was The Martian by Andy Weir. I read
it. Never heard of it.
I mean, obviously, right. It's been getting a lot of attention, especially with the movie coming out. But I finally got around to reading it. And I ended up writing an article for Lit Reactor about, you know, what the movie would need to do to kind of capitalize on what the book had, which is something I think is kind of interesting to think about, you know, when you transfer mediums, like, or media, I should say, how things change. But I think, you know, I knew I was probably going to be drawn in by the fact that it's a first person narration because I'm a sucker for those. My books are those. Like I've always been like a fan. But what I really enjoyed was the science aspect, and that was never really talked about a lot. And I mean, I guess I didn't really get into long conversations with people about it. But you know, everyone was talking about how it was a quick read. It's really engaging. You know, the character was really likable and I was really impressed by the amount of science that's in there. And I think some of it went a little bit over my head, but I really liked that. And I guess it's been a while since I've read a book, you know, a science fiction book that was like heavy on the science. And it was like actual, like real world physics kind of science and not, you know, warp drive kind of science, which I appreciated. So that I guess is my pick of the week, but I'm going to sneak in a cheat and say, cause this is something I saw months and months ago, but there's this musical called Hamilton. It's a hip hop musical. And did I talk about this?
I don't think so.
Okay. And it's playing in New York. So that's one of the reasons I didn't like pick it for my thing because, you know, most people out there aren't going to get a chance to see it unless they're in New York and go to Broadway. But it's a really fascinating musical about Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr, and the history of the United States with amazing music and really great performances. And the only reason I bring it up now is if you Google it and go on NPR's website, they're streaming currently the soundtrack. So if you want to get a sense of how what it's about, it's out there. So I'm cheating by mentioning two things.
Well, I have a question about The Martian. So did you read like a Kindle or a physical book, or how did you consume it?
I read it on a Kindle.
Okay, so I did the audiobook.
Yeah.
And the audiobook was narrated by R.C. Bray.
Okay.
And I think that if I had read it on a Kindle or a physical copy, I would have given up because of the science. Because I, longtime listeners will know, I am not a hard SF kind of person. You know, I much prefer my Star Trek and my Star Wars to generation ships and you know, slowly trekking their way across the universe over thousands of years kind of crap. So I don't think I could have gotten through that book if it weren't for the narration, because R.C. Bray brought that character to life for me in a big, big way. And so because he was so entertaining and engaging, I was able to get through that book really quickly. It never created a barrier for me. So I think that's very interesting. And when you talk about how they're going to translate it, to me, it's kind of like the Dresden Files novels at this point, right? Marsters is Harry Dresden to me.
Right.
Even when I read the physical copies, I hear Spike in my head narrating that book. So now when I go and I see Matt Damon, I'm hearing R.C. Bray.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really interesting because I'm very excited about that movie. I want to go see it. But at the same time, I'm going, now I'm going to be comparing Matt Damon, you know, Oscar-winning Matt Damon to R.C. Bray.
Well, it's interesting because, first of all, I just want to say I listen to most of the Dresden books on audio. So I have the same thing. Even when I read something, you know, before I listen to the audio, I hear it in James Marsters' voice.
Yes.
But in terms of, like, it's interesting because I'll probably end up going to see the movie, but I was a little, I finished the book. I found it engaging enough that they interspersed the science with some humor and some personality exactly. that yes. I was able to get through. But I almost don't want to see Matt Damon do it because I had such a feeling in my head of who this character was, and it doesn't quite match up with Matt Damon. And I'm sure, you know, because he's a talented actor, he can pull it off. But yeah, and I do wonder about the science because I feel like, how do you translate that in a movie? You know, you have an hour and a half, maybe a little bit longer to work with, you know, and people are going to zone out. So I was almost thinking it would be kind of cool if they just kind of put equations across the screen so that people can just, you know, okay, here's science going on and he figured it out, but we don't have to go into this right. in-depth, you know, explanation of separating out hydrogen and oxygen and filtering it through, you know, systems and things like that. So,
well, yeah. and Ridley Scott is behind the movie.
Right.
So I think what they're going to do is they are going to actually skip all the science stuff and just have it explained that someone else landed on Mars first and left all that stuff for him as like an engineer.
Ah, that's good, Patrick. That's a good one. I'm going to give you credit when you have those. Okay? You know, they don't always all land, but when they land good. All right, Patrick, what's your pick then?
My pick is actually an audiobook that I just listened to, Diving the Wreck by Christine Catherine Rush, narrated by Jennifer Van Dyke. And this is the first of the diving series of books, and it introduces the main character, and it's just a really good story. It's got elements of Creep, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that I hadn't read before. So essentially the main character is someone who goes out and finds these ships that are just left or abandoned or they've wrecked. You know, it's kind of like what we see on planet Earth where treasure hunters go out and dive the ocean, right? And they dive down and they explore these ships that are on the ocean floor that have wrecked. Well, it's the same concept only in space. And she's this character who goes out and she does this, and she even will occasionally take tourists with her and, you know, and give them the experience of diving a wreck. And very early on, she finds something that just does not make any sense and shouldn't be there, and has this traumatic experience with it. And that kind of informs the whole rest of the story. And it's just a really, really good story. And I love the narration, Jennifer Van Dyke. I've been trying to find different books to read, right? And Audible, as we've talked about before, has been making it a lot easier because I don't always have time. You know, it's like I can't read when I'm driving to work, but I can listen to an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's like the perfect time to listen to an audiobook when you're commuting, because you don't have to think about where you're driving. You know, correct. You're not following a GPS. You sort of zone out anyway, so you might as well zone out and be focused on what you're that's what I listen to primarily is and doing laundry.
So that's my pick this week.
Cool. That's great. Those are they were I know they were published by Pyre in the beginning. I don't know if they're still a Pyre book, but so we're giving Pyre a lot of love today. So, all right. So let's, we were Pyrecast when we first started. I feel like the first year of the podcast, because we knew Lou Anders, that I feel like Lou was just always like, hey, get this author on. Hey, get this. So, yeah, I used to joke around that we were Pyrecast at the time. Anyway, so Rajan's on the show today because he's got books out through Pyre, and it's Falling Sky, which is the first book in the series, and the new one is Rising Tide. I got these books sent this week, and I'm about 70 or so pages into Falling Sky and really digging it so far. The first thing I have to mention, and we were talking about Dresden and the Jim Butcher books, but you have a cover by Chris McGrath, which is fantastic. I think having a great cover really helps so much. For me, even, you know, because I get all these, I'm so fortunate to get these books sent to me. And a lot of times I have this, like, you know, stack of books on my shelf, and it's like a lot of times I pull off the ones with like the covers that I like. So, how does that work for you in terms of, first of all, do you like your cover? Second of all, how does that process work? Do you have any input into that at all?
Well, I love the cover. I love both covers. But the first one, you know, like when you're a first time author, I think there's probably, you think about like, oh, what is my cover going to look like? You know, is it going to be, you know, an illustration? Is it going to be, a more stylized kind of thing? And I had heard from published authors that, oh, you know, you don't really get a lot of say in your cover. And basically they're going to come to you and say, hey, this is the cover. And maybe you can make a few suggestions, but generally it's out of your control. But when Falling Sky was, you know, in production, Lou Anders was my editor at the time. He left shortly afterwards, but he emailed me one day and said, you know, I was talking to your agent about covers and I was thinking, Chris McGrath, what do you think? And I, you know, I had like a, you know, I had to step away from the computer and have a little bit of a, you know, like excitement dance, because, you know, I love his covers, and, you know, like reading the Dresden Files, like that's one of the, you know, the iconic things about those books is those covers. And so I was like, yeah, let's do that. That would be great.
sure. Yeah. I mean, if that's what you want. Yeah. That's nice.
So, I was really excited about that. And I think the only input I had after that was just, you know, giving, you know, like talking a little bit about the character, and, you know, there's a question I think about what kind of jacket he would wear. And that was an interesting process, because in my head, I obviously have an image of the character, and, you know, there are some descriptions in the book, but, you know, it's a first person narration. So there's not a lot of, you know, and then I shrugged on my jacket with the buckles and the whatever, you know, like he doesn't really think a lot about what he's wearing. So, you know, I had to figure out how to like translate that for the artist. So I Googled a lot of pictures of jackets, and, you know, I wanted to make sure that Ben, you know, Ben's the main character, that his look was at least correct. You know, like he's, I didn't want him to be blonde, for example. Like that wasn't, you know, the look that I wanted. So it, other than that, though, I just provided a few references, and then, you know, I think they showed me a few sketches and like, this is what he's doing. And I'm like, that looks amazing. And then the cover came out and I was just blown away. Like I thanked Chris. Actually lives in Brooklyn, and I haven't actually met him, but we've communicated a bit by email, and I thanked him for it. And he told me that he was happy with the way that came out. You know, which I guess the artists too, sometimes, you know, they're a little critical of their own work, but he said he was really happy with it. So that made me happy as well. And then when the second book was, you know, in process, I had to ask them, I'm like, hey, are we going to still get Chris to do the cover? And they're like, yep, don't worry about it. We got him on board. So that made me really happy.
Cool. Yeah. And one of the things that I really like about his work is that, you know, it has this photorealistic look, and I don't know if he has models that he uses, or I have no idea what his process is. But a lot of times when you have like that sort of combination of maybe photography and, you know, sort of more, you know, hands-on art, it looks, sometimes it doesn't always, sometimes I don't like that. Like I don't like that much detail, and it almost looks, I don't know, sometimes it can like kind of cheapen the book. I don't know, I'm not really describing it that well, because sometimes a lot of those covers, especially it's not so much nowadays, but there was like this kind of paranormal romance kind of thing where it was, you know, like the whole thing with the back tattoo and all that. But like sometimes
back tattoo, midriff showing, dagger.
Right. With a lot of those that were sort of more photorealistic, they kind of have this sort of cheap kind of vibe. And this is the opposite. I don't know why, like, because this to me is like the nicest looking kind of cover you can have. And it works so well with Chris McGrath's work, and it doesn't always work with others. So I don't know if the processes are different or if it has just a lot to do with Chris's talent as an artist. But yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. And it helped, you know, for me, it's like, you know, actually just, you know, just starting the book and only being a little bit into it, having this image is a great sort of starter. It really helps you sort of focus in on the world. And it's very consistent with the words, because sometimes even after you see a book, sometimes there is a little, you know, cognitive dissonance between the cover and what you're reading. And that sometimes has a little bit of a negative effect on your reading right. experience, you know? So yeah, so that's wonderful. So now, you know, you were talking about this one last time, and I think you were about Falling Sky, and you were saying that you were writing this at Clarion West. Is that correct? Was this like sort of an assignment that started with it?
It was usually at Clarion West, you write a story every week. At my class, the first week we did mostly exercises. So, second week was our first story. And I wrote a short story called Falling Sky, which was basically the genesis of this book. And, you know, it came from a very loose idea, because, you know, you're not supposed to go there with stories already partially written, but you can mm-hmm. bring ideas. So I had this basic idea was people live in the sky, are afraid to go down to the ground. And I was like, I'm going to write that story. But I was like, what are they afraid of? And why can't they go down to the ground? And it became this thing. So I wrote this story, and you know, the feedback I got from almost everyone was like, you have a lot going on here. You should write this as a novel. And so I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And I kind of like said, okay, one day I'm going to do that. And then that became, so the story became the prequel to, you know, it was almost like the setup for the novels. And so, yeah, so that was how that happened.
Yeah. And, so the next question that I have, so now the new book that is out, Rising Tide, so this on the cover, and again, I'm only a little bit into the book one, so I'm assuming on the cover of this book is Miranda.
Yeah.
So now is this book completely from her point of view then, or is it still, you know, I don't want you to spoil anything, but, would that be a good guess?
Well, I it's not like I basically stick with Ben for the majority of it. But I did, you know, like one of the things I wanted to do was to give other characters a little bit more to do in the second book. And Miranda becoming such a big part of the first story, it's like, you know, it made sense to kind of push her to the front of the stage a bit. And I think, you know, when you're writing, like one of the things that excited me about writing this story was the dynamic between the two of them, and you know, how they affect one another. And so yeah, I you know, like again, with the cover for this, Pyre came to me, my editor, Rini, and was like, you know, we were thinking about having Miranda on the cover this time. And I said, that's great, because at the time I was still working on the novel and it fit in with giving her a bigger presence. So it all worked out really well. And then that was another, I want to give Pyre credit, because Miranda in the books is, has always been kind of a mixed ethnic background. So, you know, I that's something that I wanted to maintain. And they were very down with that from the beginning. Like they were the ones asking me, okay, you know, what kind of look are we going for here? You know, Rini was very, very excited about the fact that we could have her in glasses, which is kind of funny, because I've heard from people saying like, oh my God, there's a woman with glasses on the cover of a book, because apparently that's not a common thing to see. And so yeah, I was really happy about that.
Yeah, she's totally covered up, and you know, no back tattoo or midriff showing, and glasses. So they're opposite of what we were just talking about. You know, to kind of switch gears a little bit, you've talked about a couple of different sort of artistic things. And I wanted to, you know, outside of writing, so one of the questions that I wanted to ask is there a non-writing artist or, you know, a particular kind of medium, whether it's music or visual art or whatever there is there anything specifically that has an influence on you as an artistic person or specifically as a writer? Like, is there a songwriter that like affects what you do? Is there a visual artist, anything like that?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I take in a lot of things from other places. I mean, I love music. I mean, music has a very big influence on me just in general. You know, I am something of an amateur musician myself. So like, you know, it's always something that I feel like feeds me in a way, but in terms of direct influence on the writing, I don't know. It's interesting because visual art is something that my brain does not comprehend from a creative point. You know, like I can appreciate it as a viewer, but I can't produce it. And I can't even conceive sometimes like how you'd sit down and paint that cover, for example. So, I mean, I understand the steps involved, but like, you know, where do you start? How do you get that thing? So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I feel like it's hard for me to pinpoint where, like, I think it's a conglomeration of, you know, real world stuff, you know, other artistic influences for each project, and kind of it forms this stew. And then, you know, my creation, whatever, just kind of is somehow related to all of that. I mean, you know, it's weird because I envision this series as being three books, big surprise. but I halfway through writing the second book, I realized that like one of the things that I've been subconsciously doing in some way was tying each book to a different element, which was kind of weird because, I mean, they're all about the air, for example, but the first book, you know, it was like there's a very strong earth component to it. The second book, there's a very strong water component to it. And the third book, which, you know, I had in conception, at least, has a very strong fire component. So it was weird for me to kind of identify this and be like, huh, how did that happen? It was not like a conscious thing that I'm like, I'm going to do this. But it's a way to help structure, I guess, the feel, the themes, whatever. And that's useful. So I think it's stuff like that where it subconsciously, has an influence. I'm trying to think though, I mean, with the post-apocalyptic stuff, I think visual stuff does have an influence because, you know, looking at other post-apocalyptic pictures or interpretations, you know, helps provide that idea of, you know, what the world will look like and what it's like to kind of be alone. And one thing that sort of came out a little bit too late, but has had an effect on me is Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road, which I was just finishing up the manuscript when I went to see that. And I walked out of that thinking, God, I didn't go far enough with this book because I don't know if you guys have seen the movie, but I loved it. And I thought like, oh, you know, there's so much craziness, awesome craziness in that movie that I feel like I wish I had thrown a bit more of that into the second book. But it's definitely something that will be in my head moving forward to the third book. Not in terms of copying, but in terms of an inspiration of, you know, to go a little bit farther because clearly, you know, the post-apocalyptic world can handle that kind of thing without losing any of the, you know, richness or depth that maybe, you know, I'd be striving for.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that you consider yourself something of an amateur musician. So what kind of music things do you do? Do you play instruments? Do you do like, you know, what do you do?
I play guitar. I play piano, but I don't have a piano, so I don't really do it that often. And theoretically, I can play saxophone, though it's been a long time since I've done that.
Saxophone.
It's funny because, you know, writing has always been an ambitious thing for me, you know, something that I had clear goals. I want to get a book published. I want to do this. I want to do that. Music has been something I've been doing my whole life, but without necessarily an end goal in mind. You know, I always thought, oh, I'll have a band. I had a band briefly, you know, oh, maybe I'll do this. But these days I mostly, you know, play as an emotional outlet and occasionally I write songs. And mostly just me and a guitar. And, you know, I've been recently thinking about getting some down on, you know, now that it's so easy to plug into your computer or put the microphone here but it's just, again, like sitting down, it's a patience thing. Like I'm more likely to probably go do an open mic as nervous as that makes me, than I am to record something, just due to the like, I don't, I'm not an engineer, you know, like, but I can play with guitar. So that's pretty much what I do. And I've thought about maybe even at some point in time doing like a soundtrack to a book or something, but I haven't actually quite done that yet.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, I was talking, we were talking about this on a recent episode, and I was talking about these, this book that I read, talking about flow experiences, and by this psychologist, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. That's how you pronounce it, but it's all these consonants and stuff in his name. But, you know, I think, you know, it's one of the things that I'm doing lately where it's doing artistic things is one way to get into that flow state where you're, you know, not thinking about time. So I think it's really beneficial creatively, even if you don't have an end goal. Sometimes it's even better if you don't have an end goal, if you don't have a like sort of an extrinsic motivator to it. It's sort of like doing the activity is its own reward, because it makes you happier. It also kind of makes you grow, and it's so even if you don't have any goals in mind, just kind of sitting down and playing guitar, and you know, Patrick plays guitar too, and you know, I think just even if you sit for 20 minutes or a half hour and just strum some of the chords, or if you're putting a song together or working out a song or something, it's a challenge for your brain and your fingers and all that stuff. I think it you know, has a positive influence on most aspects of your life, but specifically the creative part.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I still think I probably would like to do something. I know you had Matt Kressel on. He lives very close to me. We're in the same writing group. And he plays guitar. He's a very good guitar player. So I keep thinking, you know, we should do something together. I was like, almost we're doing a reading together in November, and we're going to both be at World Fantasy together. I'm like, we should do like a traveling show where, you know, instead of just promoting the book, you know, we put on a little like music show or something, actually give people more than just buy our book, you know, but I don't know if that's going to come together.
I've thought of the same thing. Like if I could get a book published, I don't necessarily like doing readings. I've done them with stories, but I always feel incredibly nervous. So I've seen other authors do other things, and I've always thought, what if I just took a guitar?
Right.
And like played a couple songs.
Well, Scalzi, like, I think has done that at his signings, where he ends up like playing ukulele for like half of his signing or his reading, you know, and he's written like little songs and just sits and plays ukulele and sings his little songs while he does his signing. So, you know, if it works for Scalzi, you know, he got like a 10-year deal. Like, that's follow his example. You know,
I don't think that was based on his ukulele playing.
You don't know that.
I do. I kind of like the idea if you're a really successful author, where people are going to come to watch you, of just being like, okay, now that you're here, I'm going to force you to watch or listen to, you know, whatever I want right now.
This is a song that I wrote when I was in high school about my dog.
Yeah, but I think that would even be the most hilarious thing, where you make it sort of like performance art, where you get, I mean, and I've been to enough open mics and songwriters groups and stuff where you get those people who are super serious, like really, really take themselves like too seriously and take their songs too seriously. And I think that'd be a great piece of performance art if an author got up there and was just like really serious about their songs and they weren't very good either. Like, we're just, I think that'd be great. But I think Scalzi kind of does it a little more humorously. But anyway, all right. Well, we, I think, are kind of coming to the end of our time here. So once again, so Falling Sky is book one. That's out now. Rising Tide is just out. And it's Raj and Connie. You can check all that out. I'm sure you can go at them at any of your local bookstores, and you get them on Amazon. And I'm sure there's going to be an ebook. Is there going to be audiobooks for these books?
There are no audiobooks right now. You know, I keep hoping that'll happen at some point in the future, but not yet.
Now, you've done some of that narrating. So would you be open to doing your own, or do you want to leave it to somebody else?
I'd be open to it. I mean, I think it would take a little prep. I mean, Ben's voice is a little bit different than, you know, because it's a first person. I think it needs a little bit of a certain touch. But I mean, I've done readings of the first and second book right now. So yeah, I mean, I think that would be a possibility. Yeah.
Cool. And so can you throw your website and your Twitter out there for people?
Sure. My website's www.rajankhanna.com, RajanKhanna. And my Twitter is at Rajanyk, RajanYk.
Cool. And do you have any con appearances coming up?
I'll be at World Fantasy Convention in Saratoga in November. And if anyone's in the New York area, I'll be reading with Matt Kressel in November. I think it's November 10th at Word in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Cool. Well, I'm going to have to try to make it out to that one then. I'm not too far from there. So I'll have to maybe try to come out and see you guys. You had both of you on the podcast, and now I got to come see your readings, I think. So cool.
Oh, right. And if I can just add one more quick thing. Nope. I'm having a launch party on October 8th at the Antler Beer and Wine Dispensary in Manhattan. So it's open to anyone who wants to come if you're in the area. So please feel free to come by.
Okay, I think they're going to have to travel back in time, though. I think that's that's okay. Oh, no. That's okay. We make no illusions that
you didn't get to go.
And it was
time
awesome.
Time travelers are welcome.
Yes, exactly. All right, cool. That's all good stuff. I'm looking forward to finishing these books myself. For me this week, you can check out johnandelio.com for some music that I've put out recently. I'm also playing some open mics these days, which has been really fun. I've just been working up some cover songs, kind of going with that whole flow thing. I'm just like, you know what? I don't care about my songs. I don't care about being successful. I'm just going to work up some covers and guitar arrangements and vocal arrangements of songs that I like and go and play them. And I've been really having a lot of fun with that. So if you're in the New Jersey area and you like some open mics, go to my Twitter, because I'll probably announce where I'm going to be playing at these open mics if you want to hear me play a couple songs. Follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Also, once again, we do have a Patreon, so go and check that out if you'd like to support the show and like to see us do additional kinds of shows, make this show better, have some additional content on the blog. We'd like to, you know, hire some people to write some content for us. Because, you know, we basically just do the podcast at this point. And at one point we had some stuff on the actual blog proper, and we'd like to maybe get back to having some good stuff there. So the more people that support that Patreon, the more cool stuff we can do. So patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you got going on?
No, usual stuff. I'm ATFMB everywhere. I write a column for Kirkus on graphic novels. I'll be at Mile High Con 47, October 23rd to the 25th. I'll be at various panels and doing stuff there. And of course, I'm going to be co-hosting the Writer's Mixer on Friday night, 9 p.m. until the bar closes and they kick us out. So if you're in the area, please come by and say hello.
Sweet. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?